This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The TV industry has been given an ultimatum. Attorney General Janet Reno warned, unless the industry moved immediately to cut back on violence, the White House and Congress would seek laws to do it. My guest, Senator Paul Simon, has given the industry a January 1st deadline to come up with a plan for reducing glamorized violence, or he will offer appropriate legislation. There are already 9 bills that have been put before Congress. The proposals include banning violence from TV during the hours children watch, issuing a violence report card and naming the sponsors of violent shows, flashing warnings in the corner of the screen during violent programs, and requiring new TVs to have a device that would enable parents to screen out violent programs. Is this creating a chilling effect on free speech and creativity? Are TV programs filled with gratuitous violence? And does violence on TV lead to violence in the real world? These are some of the questions we'll be looking at today and tomorrow. Paul Simon, Democratic senator from Illinois, has spearheaded the congressional campaign against violence on TV. I asked him what he plans if the industry doesn't make a move before his January 1st deadline.
If the industry doesn't respond, then I will ask the National Institute of Mental Health or the Center for Disease Control or the Federal Communications Commission to appoint a group that would monitor television so that once a year we would get a report. This is what ABC is doing. This is what CBS is doing. This is what NBC is doing. This is what HBO is doing. This is what Showtime and the other networks are doing. This is what's happening in the hours when children watch the most. This is what's happening in terms of violent promos. My feeling is the progress that we have made in programming this fall on the broadcast networks can be sustained if we get this annual report, and I think with the annual report also would put pressure on cable to do a better job.
Cable would be included in the report?
I think it has to be.
Would the advertisers of the shows that are reported on be mentioned too? Would this be a way of basically suggesting to viewers that they boycott the advertisers of shows that they are displeased with?
Well, I don't think that will be part of the report, but I don't think there's any question that advertisers generally will try to avoid programs that do have too much violence. We already have a cautionary notice now on certain programs with violence, and the networks have already discovered that advertisers do not like to get on programs that have those words of warning. It is, frankly, one of the more meaningful things that has happened in the last year.
You say you prefer that the industry regulate itself rather than the federal government regulating the television industry. Why is self-regulation your preference?
Well, I think we have to be sensitive to First Amendment problems. I'm a member of the American Civil Liberties Union. I do not want to do anything that in any way restricts responsible free speech in our country or even much of irresponsible free speech. I do not want the federal government censoring television, as many countries have. But I do think we have to recognize we have a serious problem and that we have to encourage responsible behavior by the television industry.
Now, some of these bills that propose regulating in one way or another violent programs on TV exempt from those regulations news programs, documentaries, educational programs, and sports events. Do you think that they should be exempted from those bills, and are they exempted from the report cards that you would like to issue?
They are exempt from the report card. When I say they're exempt, I'm talking about news. I'm not talking about what some people call docudramas, which can be abused, and we have had some abuse there. But the difference between news violence, and I think some of the news programs do have too much violence, but the difference between that news violence and violence on entertainment television, the news violence, when you see a scene from Bosnia, you see relatives crying, you see violence in all its dimensions and all its tragedy. In entertainment violence, too often you have the hero or heroine going around for 25 minutes killing people in a very antiseptic way, what one researcher calls happy violence. You don't see any unhappy results of that. You don't see relatives grieving. And, of course, the hero or heroine remains untouched throughout all of it. And young people learn that violence is a way of solving problems, and the second thing they learn is that violence is fun. Both lessons are wrong lessons to learn.
Yes, you oppose what you describe as glamorizing violence. Is this what you mean, violence that looks cool and has no consequences?
That is correct.
What are the problems you run into when there's a committee that's trying to decide what compelling, complex, humanistic portrayals of violence are and what glamorized, inappropriate, bad portrayals of violence are? Would your committee have to make those distinctions when drawing up guidelines?
Well, I don't know if you make the distinctions in the guidelines. There are some subjective decisions that have to be made. But in fact, in most cases, it is very clear. It is not that much of a problem. Obviously, if you're going to have a film about the Civil War, you're going to have some violence. But it should not be portrayed in a glamorous way. And I think people pretty much understand that distinction.
Let me take a couple of movies as examples for a second. Menace to Society and Boys in the Hood, two films about inner-city life and gangs and drugs. To some people, these films were important movies in finally making anti-violent statements because the movies were so clear in the consequences of violence. But a lot of film distributors were worried at first about taking these films into their theaters because they were afraid showing these movies might lead to violence in the theaters. So it seems to me it sometimes really isn't clear. There isn't unanimity about what is a good and what is a bad portrayal of violence and what the consequences of showing a film would be.
I think it is not always clear, and I'm not suggesting that answers are going to be easy. But I think in most cases we can recognize that. Since you mentioned films, my wife and I recently bought the film Laura. And your listeners who are older will recognize the name of that movie. It was Gene Tierney and Dana Andrews. And it really struck my wife and me as we watched that, how the two leading actors and actresses were smoking all the time, drinking heavily. That's part of the old films. We gradually moved away from that, and in the process, I think have helped to change conduct because we imitate what we see on the screen. We know from history, from what's happening on smoking and drinking, that what appears on that screen does have an impact on us, and if we can get a positive message on violence rather than the negative messages out there now, I think it will be helpful in our society.
But here's a question. Sometimes to have a positive message about violence means showing violence and the consequences of that violence. If you have a TV program that shows violence and shows the consequences of it, and the moral of the story is violence is a terrible thing, but in the course of telling that story, you see acts of violence, how would that be interpreted in your report card?
Well, I would leave that up to people who are more expert in this field than I am. I'm not here with all the answers. What I am here saying is that we have a problem, and the American people are entitled to know, are we making progress in dealing with this problem, or are we not?
I guess what I'm wondering is, are you confident that a committee could deal with the ambiguity of art? The ambiguity of screenplays and programs.
No question about it. And most acts of violence really fall into one category or another fairly clearly. And I also think the committee might make recommendations. For example, on British television, they follow the same code that was followed in the ancient Greek theater. And that in the ancient Greek theater, any murders occurred off stage and were referred to by the actors or actresses on stage. A little in the way the film, the TV series Murder, She Wrote, or Columbo, does the same thing. In the British television rules are that no murder shall take place on screen unless it is absolutely essential to the plot of the show.
It's funny you should mention those two shows, because those two shows, I think, are particularly designed for older Americans.
Well,
I mean, they're not younger people's programs.
No, but I think you can have younger people's programs that are nonviolent, that have constructive messages. I think we have people who are creative enough to do that.
Well, let me get back to the Boys in the Hood question, Menace to Society. I'm not sure if you've seen the films or not, but are those films that you consider to be constructive films in their message or negative films in their message because they actually show acts of violence?
I have avoided commenting on specific films and specific shows simply because once I get down that line, I end up trying to pretend I'm an expert, and I don't pretend to be. I'm not an expert.
Some people are saying that there are members of Congress who are trying to make violence on TV more of the issue than violence in real life. In other words, guns on TV are getting more attention, some people say, than actually focusing on the problem of guns in the streets. I mean, I know the Brady Bill was passed. Many people think that doesn't go nearly far enough in terms of getting guns out of the hands of civilians. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
I don't think it's a fair criticism. If I can take myself as an example, I was a co-sponsor of the Brady Bill. I'm the chief sponsor of the bill to crack down on gun dealers. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill to outlaw a number of weapons that I think have no place in our society. I've also been one of the leaders in working on problems of employment and poverty, which are obviously causes of crime also. Those in the industry who say, well, we're saying that television is the cause of crime in our society, simply misread it. And those who simply deny that there's any relationship between crime in our society and violence on the screen are ignoring all the research.
How did this become an important issue for you, this issue of television violence?
I got into this very accidentally. I checked into a motel room one night, turned on my television set, and there in front of me in living color, someone was being sawed in half by a chainsaw. I'm old enough to know it's not real, but it bothered me that night, and I thought, what happens to a 10-year-old who watches this? So the next morning, I called my office and said, there has to be research somewhere about what happens to children on this. And they came back and said, there's all kinds of research. And the Surgeon General has warned us, the National Institute of Mental Health has warned us, but no one had given it any attention. So I called some of the representatives of the television industry together and said, I don't want censorship. I'm an ACLU member. I'm sensitive to civil liberties, but we have to do something about it. And they said, well, we can't get together to establish standards because it would violate the antitrust laws. And that's how I got in the whole thing.
No, I think that chainsaw episode you were talking about is probably from a movie. It was probably a movie that was being shown on TV, yes?
That's what they tell me. I frankly didn't keep the show on long enough to find out what it was from.
If your report card goes into effect, analyzing the amount of violence on each TV network and cable network, how would it work in reducing and actually reducing violence on TV? How would you hope it would be effective?
I think it would be effective simply because it would be bad public relations for any network that got a bad report card. And I think you would see the report card each year stimulating further discussion and probably some further research in this field. I think if the American people are informed, they can make the right decisions. Right now, there is on the part of most Americans an intuitive belief that violence on the television screen adds to violence in our society. But a report card and a little more knowledge about the research, I think, would be helpful.
I know you'd like to see more positive messages on TV. Janet Reno said something to the effect that she hopes one day public service announcements will become unnecessary because the TV shows will have virtually become those announcements. Would you like to see that?
Yes, I think you can convey in positive ways that violence is the wrong thing. But when not only children, but a president of the United States says, make my day, what he is conveying with that is that violence is an answer to the problem, and violence gives you pleasure. We need to convey in our stories a different message.
Last question. What do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. I wish I could answer that question for you.
Senator Simon, thank you very much for talking
with us. Thank you very much.
Senator Paul Simon of Illinois. We'll hear from Marjorie Hines of the ACLU after a break. This is Fresh Air. First Amendment activists are concerned about the current attempts to restrict violence on television. They say it's unconstitutional for government to regulate the content of TV, and more subtle forms of government pressure have a chilling effect on free speech. Marjorie Hines is the director of the Arts Censorship Project of the American Civil Liberties Union and author of the book Sex, Sin, and Blasphemy, A Guide to America's Censorship Wars. She opposes Senator Simon's idea of a government agency monitoring violence on television and issuing a report on its findings. I asked her why.
Well, the obvious purpose is, first of all, he's singling out a certain type of content in the arts and entertainment, which he disapproves of, he disfavors. That's clear. And the purpose of this government commission, it's essentially a rating or classification board. It's another type of classification board. And although ratings and classifications are not as insidious and direct a form of censorship as criminal penalties or direct orders by the FCC or some other government agency, they have the same intent, which is to suppress, to intimidate, and to chill certain types of expression. And they suffer also from the same deficiencies of vagueness and lack of definition and subjectivity. I mean, who are these people who are going to decide what is, what are the definitions even going to be? If this commission is told that it's going to issue a report card on gratuitous violence or violence for violence's sake or excessive violence, what do those words mean and how are they to distinguish between news reports, sports, violence in Schindler's List or Bonnie and Clyde or Shakespeare or there's just such a vast array of violent content in throughout our culture and there always has been. And in arts and literature reflect that. So you have a government body that is going to be completely stymied by impossible definitional problems. And that is the reason that the courts have consistently struck down any governmental attempt to suppress or regulate so-called violent or excessively violent content, primarily on grounds of vagueness. You just can't define it. It's too subjective.
Well, you say that a report card would have a chilling effect on the media. But isn't that exactly the effect that the people behind the report card wanted to have? And doesn't a lot of the American public want it to have that effect, too? Don't a lot of people want to see less violence on television?
Well, first you have to ask what the definition of violence is. I mean, Janet Reno is a perfect example. Attorney General Reno, when she made her threat to the television industry, said that she would exclude sports because, in her opinion, sports are people watching sports events, that's a healthy outlet for natural, aggressive, and violent impulses. Well, that's just a perfect example of how subjective this is. So there's such a broad range of public opinion on this, and everybody has a different notion of what they think is offensive or harmful, that I would not agree that the American public wants any kind of legislation.
Is there ever a time when regulation of violence depicted in movies or TV is appropriate, do you think?
Well, I think the Supreme Court came up with the right test in the mid-60s, and that test has been followed consistently in a number of cases that we sometimes call copycat cases, where a rock group or a magazine or what have you was sued for having described or arguably suggested a certain violent or otherwise antisocial or undesirable action. And basically, unless the speech amounts to direct incitement to violence or other unlawful conduct and is intended to incite, almost a solicitation standard, then it's protected. It's protected by the Constitution. Even advocacy of the overthrow of the government is protected by the Constitution, unless it amounts to direct incitement. And that's the proper standard, because any lesser standard gets us into a realm where the government or private censors are arguing this speech, this book, this tract, this song, this TV show is dangerous because it fosters bad attitudes. It gives people bad ideas. And that's thought control.
You are the director of the ACLU Arts Censorship Project. I'd like you to step back a second from TV violence and look at the big picture for us. Where are the efforts coming now to regulate speech in the arts and entertainment? Put this effort in a larger context for us, if you will?
You know, it's hard. It's a good question. It's hard to pinpoint the source. What we have seen in the last decade or so is a mentality developing, a censorship mentality. And I think this does come in waves in U.S. history when you look back, whether it's violence or sex, which tend to be the two main, or subversion, which was the other target earlier in American history, speech that was considered somehow politically threatening. Certainly in the last 10 years, and really, I think, starting with the Parents Music Resource Center and the attacks on music, on rock music, and then following with the Mies Commission and pornography and a lot of hysteria about sexuality in art and entertainment, and now the current phase with violence. But what it all has in common is this censorship mentality, what I refer to in my book as scapegoating speech. Ever since at least the mid-'80s, it has become a very popular, I think, notion with a large proportion of the public that we can blame our social problems, we can attribute our social problems to the messengers. People, in other words, have it exactly backwards. The artists and entertainers who are reflecting, who are commenting upon, who may in fact be expressing antisocial attitudes, but the people who are giving us the message about our culture and society are the ones that are being blamed. And somehow there's this magical notion that if we just close our eyes and close our ears or suppress the message, the problems will go away.
You know, I think some people would say it's hard to talk about violence on television in the same context that you talk about censorship of the arts, that television isn't art, it's the entertainment industry, and the people who control it are people out to make a buck, and sometimes the way to make a buck is to exploit people's feelings about sex and violence and so on. And you know, of course, there's going to be some pretty exploitive programs on. And it's not the same issue as the arts. Is that fair?
Well, it may be fair, but it's also elitist. The Supreme Court said a long time ago, they haven't always abided by this, but they were right when they said it, that it's largely because government can't make principled distinctions in this area, that we leave matters of taste and style largely to the individual. High art, low art, popular culture, the ballet African or new dancing in the local bar. I mean, why should they have different treatment just because one, if it's both new dancing, just because a more educated individual may prefer one to the other?
Marjorie Hines directs the ACLU's Arts Censorship Project. She's the author of Sex, Sin, and Blasphemy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.